Hello and welcome to the 11th Hour with me, Vincent Woods. In tonight's show, we're considering older age and the arts, partly in acknowledgement of the Festival of Beltane, which takes place all around the country this month, but more because it's an important subject and one which is perhaps too often pushed to the margins of debate. How old is older? And as you get older, how do you maintain a career as an actor, a visual artist, musician or dancer? Can you retire from a vocation? And does following your passion help keep you younger? To discuss these and other issues, I'm joined in studio by four people, by four eminent artists indeed. Imogen Stewart, who has been working as a sculptor for 60 years. Prima ballerina Joanna Banks, who continues to work into her 60s. Actor David Kelly, who's taking on Hollywood roles some 70 years on from his first appearance on the Gaiety stage. And veteran musician Pather O'Loughlin, currently on a nationwide tour, who joins us from our Limerick studio. You're all very welcome to the programme. As I say, you're all working. So could I begin with a very simple question, which is, what are you doing now? David, I know that you have several films coming up.
Yes, I've a couple of films due out. There's one due any moment, I think, in the cinemas here, with Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer, name dropper that I am. That's due out, and it's called Stardust. And I've a script at home which is from the Tom Hanks organisation, and I hope to do that sometime in July.
Excellent. We'll come back to Stardust and more. Imogen, I know you've been working on a large angel, a sculpture of
right,
a large angel.
Well, actually, that is something very exciting, and it will take a little while until he's finished. From my end, he's finished at the moment. I did him in plaster. He's over 7 foot high. And he's going off Grafton Street in Johnson Court. Do you know Johnson Court? That's the street where there's that little Carmelite church. And he'll go on the tower. And I think he's going to be a pretty lively one.
Well, again, we'll hear more about that angel. Joanna, what are you up to?
Well, at the moment I'm teaching in the College of Dance, which is my baby and my passion, training the next generation. But along with that, I work with John Scott's Irish Modern Dance Theatre. And I was very lucky. I was in Paris with John in January. We performed two different pieces. We were staying in the cultural centre there. And then at the end of this month, we are taking one piece down to the Vibrate Festival in Athlone. I think that's on the Saturday. And then we continue on the Sunday down to Sligo. And we do a second piece in Sligo. And then there's a possibility that I might be involved with something in the Carlo Festival, but that's to be decided.
There are always the possibilities. One always looks forward to possibilities. Pather O'Loughlin, I mentioned there that you were on a nationwide tour. Would you tell me a little bit about that?
I know very little about it, but it was all organised by Louise Welch and Maeve Donnelly.
This is Music Network, I believe.
That's right. I have done a good bit of recording and playing around the country with Maeve Donnelly and Ronan Brown. So Maeve chose to bring us along with her. She's the one that's running the show very efficiently. And Sean Corcoran, who is a member of a group called CRAN, and so is Ronan Brown. So we're kind of people that meet often.
Fine
and
musicians
a big,
all.
Big gap of age between us, all right.
David, if I could come back to yourself. In a sense, you need no introduction. Pather was saying earlier, is that David Kelly? Tell him, you know, Rash is Tyranny, we remember, and I'm sure everybody does. Everybody does. And that was one of the books, Trumpet City was one of the books that made a huge impression on me as a lad. And the film later.
Well,
it's unforgettable.
Great, yes.
But since then, I mean, you've been, in a sense, you're probably as active now as you were then.
I am. To tell the truth, I do a little less than I used to then. I mean, when I played Rashes, I was only 50, you know. But as one commentator said on my 70th birthday party in here in this studio, I think, how is it that David Kelly's been 70 for the past 40 years? You know, because I never played the glamorous young dishy parts. But no, I do a little less of my own volition But I still work, and I've several films coming out. And I made a short film for the short screen thing on the Miles Nicopolean theme, which was shown the other night in the Irish Film Centre. And yes, I just keep working. I turn down a lot of work because I
decided...
Probably
a rare thing for an actor.
Well, for an actor to do, you know, I turn down parts that if you told me I'd be turning them down 5 years ago, I would have said no. But I've never consciously given a bad performance. And if I feel something is, you know, too strenuous or I might collapse in the middle of it, I don't do it. But I do continue to work, and the work certainly, you know, pours in as much as it did when I was a great deal younger.
Take me back to the very early days. On last night's programme, we heard a good deal about Micheál MacLiamore, and you worked in The Gate with MacLiamore
in
the early days.
And I worked before I worked with them in The Gate. In the 50s, I played with them in The Madwoman of Shiloh as a juvenile lead. I think the only juvenile lead I ever played. And that was wonderful. But then I went on to work with him, and I did his last play in The Gate shortly before he died.
And he was a remarkable figure in Irish theatre.
Oh, he was a huge influence. I mean, a huge influence on me and many people. And they turned out very beautiful work, again, with very little money, because they were no grants or anything, until Charlie came along and decided if the Abbey got a grant, The Gate should have one. And it's moved on since then, and it's now the most marvellous theatre of all. But working with Michael was wonderful.
Of course, again, looking back, you actually started. I mean, obviously you had this urge towards acting, but you started out with the possibility of another career in an advertising agency.
Well, it wasn't an advertising agency. No, my dad, God rest him, worked with Brown and Nolan's. Long since gone.
Publishing house.
And there was, when I left school as soon as possible, because I was in Sing Street, couldn't wait to go. I'd even an idea to become a redemptorist. I was that keen to get out of school. But there was a position for a lithographer, a lithographic artist, and calligrapher.
Mm.
I still write like a demented monk.
And you still paint, don't you?
Oh, I still paint, if you use the term loosely. yes, I turn out to harmless watercolours that, you know, give little offence and aren't very good. The kind of thing your Aunt Fanny might paint, you know, this sort of thing. But, you know, this was simply wasted time, you know, and I got out of that very fast, leaving a job that paid me 15 quid a week to go and work in with the Globe Theatre in Dunleary for £6 a week. So I was insane even then, but I was doing what I wanted to do. And somebody very wisely said to me at the time, remember, it's better to be fighting for your very existence than to be bored. And I believe that to the present day.
And is that, in a sense, what keeps you going? This knowledge that you have done what you wanted to do? Even at times, and I'm sure there must have been difficult times and adversity.
Oh, a lot of the time it was champagne and ashes, because we were very badly paid. But unlike those who talk about the 50s being grey and boring and nothing happening, they were wonderful times for artists. Beautiful things happened. And you had a very small palette because there was very little money in it. But great things happened in the 50s. It was a great town in the 50s. People were nicer. And we just enjoyed ourselves. We had very little money. But then you didn't need it. They hadn't invented inflation. And we had parties, which you could, again, have a large party for no money at all. And we did lovely work, and it was just great. But that it is what keeps me going, yes.
It's interesting, actually, when you say that about the 50s, because, there is this perception of times past having been harsh. And it's always struck me that it must be more complex than that.
It's a lot. There's been so much chat about it lately from people who should know better. And then very young people who, by definition, weren't there.
And can't know.
Can't know, and they don't know.
Yeah.
It was not a great town. It was a great place. There was a lot of poverty, but there was a lot of poverty in London and Berlin and everywhere else.
We're discussing some of the issues around the arts and older people and in studio, as well as David Kelly. We've Imogen Stewart. And Padraig O'Loughlin in Limerick and Joanna Banks, dancer. Imogen, if could come to yourself. You've seen a lot. You grew up in Germany before the war. You came to Ireland in the 40s. And so you've seen enormous change. Did you imagine when you came here that you would be working as a sculptor so many years later?
Oh, yes, because I was always a sculptor from the minute I left school. I studied at the end of 45. The war finished in April, and I started working as a sculptor or studying in November. So it was always one thing, one track mind I had.
And what this was, I know that you come from a very artistic family. So obviously you would have been encouraged in whatever you wanted
very
to do.
Very much so, very much so, by both of my parents. My father was a writer, but both of them, my father was able to sketch also very nicely, and he was filming, and he was an artistic person all around. So was my mother.
And so when you had this fairly intensive training in sculpture, you came here, and from early on, your work has had a very strong religious dimension.
Well, yes, it happened because my professor, who was 25 years professor of sculpture in Berlin, he was a Bavarian. And that's where I was trained by him. And at that time, there wasn't much food around still after the war, 45. And the Bavarian farmers, they're quite interested in doing a country people altogether. They were interested in three-dimensional pieces, sculptures. And they like to have a crucifix in their dining room or in their kitchen. And they like to have crib figures and all that sort of thing, Madonnas. So we did for cheese and butter and things like that. We carved religious figures. And he was actually being brought up in Upper Bavaria. In Berlin, he was what you call the diaspora. He was in the diaspora because Berlin is Protestant. And any kind of Catholic church, he did work beautiful. He was an expressionist artist. And there's still some there. I've seen them in the flesh, sort of, in Berlin, and they looked beautiful.
I mean, many people will be familiar with some of your work from around the country, but I'm intrigued by the angel you've talked about, this angel for Clarendon Street Church.
Yeah, well, it is a very exciting commission to get because he's going outside. I've done him in plaster. Direct, like stucco work. You know, it's not modelling in clay and not casting. But he's now going to be cut up as soon as we have planning permission, which unfortunately they need to have for some reason or another. Wouldn't you think that you'd need planning permission for an angel?
You couldn't need planning permission for an angel.
I think so too, yeah. And so he's going to be cut up, and then he will be cast in bronze in sections. Then he has to be welded together again and patinated, and then we hoist him up. It's a big operation.
It's also very tough physical work, sculpture.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I feel that now.
Is it getting tougher as you get older?
Oh God, yes, indeed. Oh yeah, especially you can't work that long hours anymore. So it is a handicap.
How do you manage?
You just have to. Well, you get clever in so far that you have wonderful people all during life. You gathered beautiful people around you, and you get a lot of help now. I do get help, and that's wonderful. Some of the people, I have that wonderful stone carver. We worked together for 40 years. He's still for me a boy. So I can't think of him as a grown-up person yet. In the foundry, it's the same. And then I have a very nice young assistant in sculpture, in doing that angel. I couldn't have done without her. She was a great help. So you do learn that over the years, how to direct your work.
Could you ever imagine yourself retiring?
No. Actually, when I was younger, I said, oh, no, people asked me, when are you going to retire? Well, I said, I'm not going to retire. I'm going to die with my boots on. But now I'm wearing boots in my studio, and I don't like the idea at all. I don't say it anymore. I said it in a frivolous way. I don't feel like that anymore. I don't think it's
boots on or gloves off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clearly for you, what you do, your work is your life in a sense.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's a vocation.
Yes, yes.
It's much more than simply work.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's in fact enjoyment, constant enjoyment. I mean, it is awkward now. On that angel, as you know, that angel is going high up. So I have to work under the seam, under his dress, under his clothes. And the soles of his feet had to be worked at because you see them. So I had to lie on the ground. I mean, that was... Getting down and getting up was a problem. That used to be, of course.
But it should also be an inspiration for many younger people.
I suppose so, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do this at 80.
Yeah.
It should be give us all some hope and inspiration.
Yeah.
Padraig O'Loughlin in Limerick. Music is your life in a way that I think for the others is acting and sculpture and dancing. Tell me how you came to music as a boy growing up.
The music was played in the house, and my father was a good concertina player and flute player and fiddler. Well, concertina was his good one, I think. But there was lots of other musicians around when I was... I heard very little of him playing, you know, but because he's... his life was a bit tough with 13 of us in the family, and my mother died when I was only 4 years and there was one younger than me. So we didn't hear many music tunes from him after that. So there was plenty of other musicians around the parish. There was Mickey Hanrahan, Jimmy Kennedy, Paddy Murphy, who was the man, I think, responsible for all the great concertina playing that's going on at the moment. A lot more, Hugh Doohan, and they formed a band in that time, which was way too strong for me. I was very young at the time, in 1940. I was only 11 years. Even that they were the farthest away of them was only 3 miles. I would have to walk to there many, many years after before I got my first trip to Milltown Malbay, with a band that was locally, the Fiach Ró Cayley Band, which is in the parish of Kilmaley. And it was a great day out. We brought it back to Milltown at the age of 17 years or so. It was my first time going there. It was like going to New York now. But I went to a play with this band at a fish. And from there on, we were getting a bit older and stronger and bolder, I suppose, and moving around. So it took a long time before I went out of Clare to hear music. So that's where the music all started for me anyway.
And you were great friends, of course, with Willie Clancy.
I was, yeah. Well, I didn't know Willie for a lot of my life, in my young life, because when I should have known Willie best, soon after that he went to live in Dublin, and he went from that to London. And he came back to Milton Malbay in 1957 and he stayed with us. And from there on, I had the most time with Willie. Also, going up to Dublin and meeting the likes of Tommy Potts, Tommy Rick, Seamus Innes, that was a great life for me. And it wasn't a money job, it was just to hear those people. Now it's a bit of a hunt, I think. You know, it reminds me now of the Grand National, to know who'll get to the winning post first.
Who'll get the prize?
Who'll get the prize? It went from that to that and going to Flas and going up to the Rochtus and meeting all those people. When there wasn't a question of the money anyway. David Kelly might be making a bit more money there.
We won't get into the issue.
No,
money,
we won't get into it.
That's a black lie. Are you sure he's not a critic?
We'll compare notes afterwards. Tell me, you grew up listening to older musicians, and so, you know, in a sense, you've inherited a tradition and you're passing it on again. Is that line across the generations, you know, from youth to age, important to you in what you do? In playing music, like you're playing now with Ronan Brown, and so again you have the generations there.
Yes, well, because I'm a lot of years older than Ronan Brown. I don't know if I told you or Ronan tell you that when he was first introduced to me by his mother back in Milton Malbay, it was at around the time that Willie Clancy had died, Dennis Murphy died, and Joe Cooley died, and when his mother said introduced him to me, and he looked up at me as a young lad, and he said, "I thought he was dead." He thought I was going along with the rest of them, but I wasn't. I'm still around.
And a good thing that you are. Tonight we're considering the subject of older age and the arts with me, actor David Kelly, sculptor Imogen Stewart, musician Pather O'Loughlin, who's in our Limerick studio, and prima ballerina Joanna Banks. And Joanna, to you we turn. Dance in Ireland, you grew up in London and you came to dance as a very, very young girl. Tell me about your entry into that world.
Well, I went to ballet classes when I was 3 and a half, which is slightly ludicrous, but my parents knew nothing about dance, but I was the firstborn and my mother thought that I walked with a slightly deficient way with my feet. There was actually nothing wrong with me at all, but the doctor, I think, to get my mother off his back, said, "Oh, well, a little ballet lesson wouldn't do any harm." Unfortunately, where we were living at that time in London, there was a very good ballet teacher, and she didn't attempt to do classical ballet at 3 and a half, but she did children's dancing classes, and she had a lovely pianist, and it was really improvisation. I mean, I had a fertile imagination, and she had a lovely pianist, and we would be butterflies and fairies and do a few little steps. I was completely hooked on it. I mean, I cannot remember a time when I didn't want to dance. And this is very strange because I hadn't seen any dance. I mean, I was actually born in 1940, so the bombs were about to drop on London. I was evacuated to live with my grandparents, and I can only think that my grandfather's obsession with Tchaikovsky could have been a slight influence, because I know that he had very old gramophone records which he played endlessly. So obviously in my cradle I was being drip-fed Tchaikovsky. Be that as it may, I can't remember a time when I didn't passionately want to dance. And I loved going to these children's dancing classes. And, of course, one thing led to another. Instead of going one afternoon, I would go two, I would go three. And it became quite serious. My father was very sceptical about this because I come from quite an academic family and he saw his firstborn daughter going to university. And he became seriously concerned, although I was only about 7 at the time. And my mother, purely by chance, happened to come across a prospectus for the Royal Ballet School, which was Sadlerswell's Ballet School in those days, and it was in its absolute infancy. I think it had only kicked off in about 47. And more or less within the first year, I had gone for an audition. I was too young to join the school as such, but they ran junior associates. And I was accepted, and I would go, I think it was Tuesday, Thursday evening, and Saturday morning, from where we lived in Middlesex, right up into West Kensington. I hate to say this, on my own. My mother would be brought to court for child neglect, I think, in this day and age.
She would now, yes.
But there were two other siblings. I passionately wanted to do this, and I did it. I remember being absolutely terrified. I was absolutely terrified because the underground in that day and age, the district line, you had to literally force the doors apart. They weren't automatic. And I wasn't very strong. And my horror was that I wouldn't be able to get out of the train at the station. And worse still, the district line train didn't stop at Baron's Court. So you had the awful business of changing at Hammersmith and crossing the platform. But I made it. I was never late for class. And I just knew that this was the training I needed. And then it all followed on very nicely because when I was 11, I was accepted into the ballet school as such, which pacified my father because it was a grammar school education in the same building. I mean, the academic curriculum was run concurrently with the ballet classes. Dame Lynette de Valois, of course, is a terrific Irish woman, which we tend to forget, born in County Wicklow. She had actually modelled it on the Vaganova School in St. Petersburg, where the dance education is in tandem with academic education. And I just let things take their course. We were assessed every year. It was horrific. I mean, you could have been thrown out of the school at any stage. I survived the course. I subsequently actually joined the Royal Ballet at the tender age of 17. Was not particularly happy in the company and then transferred to the Ballet Rombert, where I was extremely happy. It was a much less well-funded company, but we toured the English provinces and occasionally abroad. 8 performances a week, I think, for the princely sum of £8.50 a week. And you stayed in the theatrical digs. And you danced your socks off. And you learnt your craft. It was just wonderful. And I never wanted to do anything else.
And it's a very tough life. Again, no more than sculpture. Dance is very demanding physical work.
It's physically extremely tough.
Do you find it difficult as you get older to remain dancing, to remain a professional dancer?
Well, I'm in my 60s now and I wouldn't dream of attempting to do classical ballet. I think it's like David says, you choose your work to suit what you're capable of doing. I was very lucky. I was very healthy. I had a very good compact body which wasn't prone to injury. And I did heavy classical work right up until I was 48.
Which is unusual.
It is unusual.
Their 30s, don't they, in their
I suppose there's always the chance that you get a bad injury which can knock you out of the profession. And most of the women tend to retire, I would say, in their 30s. But if you have a consuming passion, you find ways of continuing. And I was extremely lucky. I came to Ireland latterly in my career and was with the Irish Ballet Company based in Cork, touring all over the country. And then I left there in 84 and came up to Dublin. And this was a big time of questioning everything in my life because I knew that I wouldn't be able to dance classically very much longer, but I still was passionate about it. I still did class. I still kept myself in incredibly good physical shape. And I was lucky enough to meet the late John Regan. And I had 2 amazingly fruitful years at the end of my career as a classical dancer between about 85 and 87. John choreographed work on me. John had worked at the tail end of the Diaghilev Company. He had an incredible pedigree, was a unique artist and choreographer, very much undervalued. This country really doesn't know about John because he spent a lot of his life outside of the country. But he came back and it was just such a privilege to work with him. And it was a very amazing period because he understood my weaknesses, he understood my strengths, and he built roles that suited me. And I had the unique pleasure of doing a one-woman show in The Project in 87 with John as a support mime. He wouldn't pretend to dance anymore, but he was still a wonderful partner. And I think the pièce de résistance was we did a version of the Schubert Death and the Maiden, with John playing the very stark death figure. And I was absolutely pushed to the pin of my collar because at 80 he had such stage presence that I had to really do my bit. And there was quite a frisson in that. And it was just an extraordinary thing to do.
How do you view the state of dance in Ireland now?
I think things are improving. I think there's an enormous blossoming of contemporary dance. And it's very difficult to have a good classical ballet company on limited funding. I think the Ballet Ireland try very hard to produce on a ridiculously low budget, good quality dance. And I know Alan Foley is also working down in Cork. But I think when the Arts Council annihilated all the companies in I think it was about 89, I think there was a conscious decision then to fund more the contemporary side of things, which was fair enough because they hadn't had a look in before that. And a lot of extremely interesting work has come out of that. And I really shouldn't complain because that has given me a new lease of life in that John Scott, who works really at the cutting edge of dance theatre with Irish Modern Dance Theatre. I'd retired for 8 years, and John twisted my arm and said, would you possibly do a little vignette piece? I'm doing a site-specific work in a gallery. I'd love you back on stage. And I said, John, you must be joking. I've retired for 8 years. The last thing I did with John was very special. I'm very happy. I'm teaching the next generation. I'm very fulfilled as a teacher. But John was deliciously persistent. And I remember talking to the late Carolyn Swift. I rang her in a panic and said, Carolyn, what do I do? I'm tempted. And Carolyn said, look, Joanne, life is for living. She said, you've nothing to lose. And I suppose the rest is history.
Life is for living, you've nothing to lose. It strikes me, and you'd said as well, this notion of an all-consuming passion. It strikes me,
totally,
listening to all of you, that this is what has driven you in your life and in your work. And just briefly to sum up, what would you say to young people now who might be considering a career outside of the so-called norm and who might think, is it a risk worth taking? Is it somewhere they can go?
Yes. Emphatically, yes. As I say, the man said to me a long time ago, better to be fighting for your very existence than to be bored. We all know that probably most people, certainly a hell of a lot of people, work in a job that they hate for a lot of money, for the second house, for the third car, and they sell their lives for this cash, hating every second of the day. And, as I say, long before 60, retire, go on a cruise, have a heart attack and die. That's no way to live. No, just do it, for God's sake, because
you
will regret it.
Yes, I feel that, I think for young people, I would say you must have patience, because things may not always work out as well when you're young. But as long as you love what you're doing and then have patience, I think that's enough.
Pather, what would you say to young people who might be thinking of following a career in music?
I wouldn't. There's only very few people in traditional music made a living out of following the music. A lot of us played the music for no reason only to play it. But other people have made a career out of it and would look to them. But I wouldn't expect anyone, only some very lucky few, to make a good career out of traditional music at the moment or ever.
But you'd never regret the years you played?
No, the best years and the best music and the best times I had was when I walked from home to different places to hear music. That was when you loved what you were doing. When you're doing it for a living, it's different. I'm not doing it. I never did it for a living.
Joanna, what would you say to young people who might be thinking of following dance?
Well, I'm right in the middle of it because I run the College of Dance, and when we select people by audition for the college, there has to be that consuming passion. And you learn to spot it. It's that gleam in the eye. They're not interested in making money. They're interested in dancing because it's an inborn passion and they actually have to do it. I mean, there's so many easier things. It's physically, it's very, very tough. It's an extremely demanding, and unfortunately, you can't be too patient, because for most dancers, it is a short, early career, and you've really got to go with it and do it as young as you can.
But if it's something you want to do.
But if it's something you want to do, you can't stop them doing it. You really can't. I mean, I had a lot of parental opposition, but you override it. And there has to be that determination, that steely glint in the eye, and the absolute passion. And it's not an easy career. You just don't let the obstacles stand in your way. You circumnavigate them and you go for it.
My thanks to all of you. Joanna Banks, Pather O'Loughlin in Limerick, David Kelly and Imogen Stewart. And that's it from the 11th Hour for tonight. The programme was researched by Elizabeth O'Neill and Susan O'Loughlin and produced by Kay Sheehy. Denise Davies was the broadcast coordinator and Michael Wright was on sound. From me, Vincent Woods, and everyone on the 11th Hour, bye for now.